Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. There's a brand new cover crop tool that's been released by the FarmDoc team, actually a series of folks here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Jonathan Kappas now joins us from the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Economics. Hi, Jonathan. Thanks for being with us. I said brand new tool, but this is actually a tool that is a year old, I guess, now, and it was updated. So first, why was this cover crops tool created? What is it supposed to do?
Yeah, so thanks, Todd. This is it's good to talk to you. And it is a year old. We released it last October. The first iteration of it, we updated it going into the new year. And then this is our second update. So a little bit of background on this. We've been working together with kind of a multidisciplinary team, like Ravine and Trent, with Shalimar Armstrong at Purdue and others around. And then working very closely with our National Center for Supercomputing Applications here on campus. And the idea was we have this, it sort of comes out of the nutrient loss reduction strategy and the need for farmers to reduce the loss of nitrogen in particular in Illinois. And we know that cover crops is arguably the most effective in-field practice to cut that nutrient loss because you're growing it in the fallow season. So it's going to absorb or scavenge that extra nitrogen. It's going to hold it in that in the crop biomass, and so it's not going to be leaching into the tile and from the tile to the waterways and all the way down to that dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. So we kind of began with that. We've gotten some very generous funding from NREC, the Nutrient Research and Education Council here in the state. We've gotten some generous funding from the Walton Family Foundation to build this tool. And the idea was, look, we understand, you know, cover crops have these benefits, but for the farmer, you know, there's added cost, there's added management needs, there's added risk. You're putting a crop in what would normally be fallow, and you've got to deal with that crop, particularly in that planting window in the spring. So we started working with Ravine and with NCSA to try to design a way to just provide this sort of best estimate modeled outcomes of what's going on in that field if you put a cereal rye cover crop in.
We'll hear more about that in a moment, but just to insert here, NCSA is the National Center for Supercomputing Applications here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, and the tool is online and it runs out of those supercomputers. Again, here's Jonathan Kappas.
And as Trent will talk about, you know, the big time frame is in that spring stretch to know, you know, what kind of biomass is out there. And we also want to know what kind of nitrogen uptake, what have we prevented from being lost? And so that's where it began. And then as we've developed and worked through this, we keep looking for new ways to improve the tool, some of it from feedback we get from farmers and working with different groups of farmers, some of it just trying to improve, you know, around the science and around the modeling and get a better estimate of that cover crop. And so this latest iteration is kind of a combination of both of those attempts, where we've added some functionality that we think is really important, and we've improved some of the modeling capabilities. And so we've probably extended the amount of my understanding of this. And so the experts that we have out here with us this afternoon can talk about more specifically what we've done with this release. But it comes out of that nutrient loss reduction strategy and the idea we want to help farmers as they try to manage through the decision process around adopting this incredibly important practice for nutrient loss reduction.
So I'd like you to join me in asking questions of the other two, because I bet you're able to target some of the places I'm headed. So do that. I want to bring a couple of folks into the conversation. They include Trent Ford. He's the Illinois State Climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute here on campus, and in the College of ACES and ABE, the Department of Agricultural and Biological Engineering. Rabin Batrai is with us, and he's a modeler. So let's wait on the modeler for just a second, because data input is the important part that the modeler has to work with. And Trent, as the meteorologist, you worked with these two and other folks on the cover crops tool. I suspect they asked you for a great deal of data as it relates to the weather, but I don't know exactly what they wanted, nor why they wanted it.
Yeah. So when Jonathan came to me and kind of presented the tool and the problem, that was over a year ago. I don't think we were wearing masks at that time. He had mentioned that, you know, they want farmers to have the right information in front of them when they're making decisions. And of course, a lot of these decisions, whether it be termination, how much nitrogen they're storing, those sorts of things, they need to know what, how weather conditions are going to affect that, not today or tomorrow, but 2, 3, 4 weeks from now. And so the original iteration of the tool was using historical data to kind of give us an outlook of, okay, if we have a wet period of time, if we have a dry period of time, if we have a warm or dry period of time. And that is a really good first start. But one of the things that I wanted to do is bring in forecast information. So we think about our National Weather Service forecasts, the dynamic forecasts, the forecasts are presented on your show, Todd, all the time, and use that information to give maybe a little bit of a more realistic outlook. Of course, forecasts are not reality. They are forecasts inherently, but it gives a little bit closer to what we're experiencing. And so therefore, if we get to, let's say, February, January, the time periods that folks are trying to start making decisions about what they're going to plant in the spring, and of course, what they're terminating in the field, the models that are able to give us as forecasts are initialized with conditions then, as opposed to being based off of historical data that may or may not take into context how warm the winter or fall has been. So what we've done is we pulled in sub-seasonal forecasts, sub-seasonal being anywhere from, you know, 1 to 4 to 5 weeks out in time, forecasts of things like temperature, precipitation, wind, solar radiation that can feed in the model, the crop models, to give a better idea of, okay, here's what the forecast, the weather models are seeing in the next 2 to 4 weeks. How's that going to affect the plants and give, again, a better, more realistic idea of for folks to make their decisions.
So that model data is coming from where?
Yeah, so it's interesting. It's from, because, you know, the National Weather Service puts out a 7-day forecast, and that's really just not enough lead time to make decisions. And so what we did is we pulled in NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's forecast from their sub-seasonal experiment, what they call SUBEX. This is started from a research experience, grown to operations to try to improve sub-seasonal prediction. Historically, predicting 1 week timescales has been fairly easy, or has been improved quite a bit, but the 2 to 4 week timescales are not. And so NOAA's got this project to improve those forecasts. So we bring those in from a multitude of models of different climate forecasts and weather forecast models. And again, these are forecasts of temperature, precipitation, and they're operational. So they're updated at least once a week. So we can update them as well as update the tool once a week or even sooner with those 2 to 4 week out weeks of weather conditions.
So Rabin, I have some questions for you. Rabin Batrai is, of course, in the College of ACES in ABE, the Ag and Biological Engineering section. You're the modeler. First, what do you do? What is a modeler?
So in terms of talking about modeling, what we try to do is we try to replicate, we try to mimic the real world phenomena through equations and numbers. So what we do is then for the model, what we try to do is let's say we have the input, right? As Trent mentioned, as you are on a daily basis, what happened today? How much rain happened? Okay, what was the temperature? And then if that the water came as, let's say, rainfall, okay, what part of that water actually run on the soil surface in your field? What fraction of that water actually went into your soil profile to increase your soil moisture content, right? And then as your water went through the soil horizon, okay, how did the other things move with that water? Okay, we compute like layer by layer calculation. Like how does your soil moisture can change as your water moves into the soil horizon? How does your nitrogen concentration in that soil can change as your water moves along that horizon? And what can happen to that water? That water can be sucked by the plant root. How does, again, the moisture content can drop in a couple of days as your plant start to draw the water from the soil profile? So we try to replicate those phenomena through the equations that based on our earlier experiment, people have done this kind of experiment for many, many years. They have come with some equations that can replicate this phenomena. And we're trying to put that together in the system to see, okay, if a farmer grows a cover crop in his field for his location, right, for his weather condition, for his soil condition, how does your cover crop simulation can make a difference in terms of water dynamics, in terms of how much tile water flow can be reduced by implementing cover crop in his field? How much nutrient loss, nitrate loss to his from his field can be reduced by implementing this cover crop? And we are focusing just one at the moment, a cereal rye, Okay. And we plan to implement more, because even with the serial implementation, we actually had go through some glitches, because the model we selected to begin with actually didn't have a serial write, because it was a crop model which has focused more on the cash crop. So it has model to simulate your corn growth, soybean growth, and lots of other 40 plus plant, which is more like a cash crop, potato and sorghum and whatnot. But there was no serial write model there. We actually had to play around with a winter wheat and then try to change some parameter for winter wheat to actually replicate your serial write growth in the model.
Okay, so Jonathan, we have the weather data coming in, we have the modeler putting it into the models, and site-specific for fields. The farmer's able to tell, I'm taking from this model, what the nutrient control is and where that nutrient might be going. That's kind of the ideal. However, there must be within the tool something that the farmer will find practical for use as it relates to managing the crop. What are those things?
Yeah, and something key that Rabin was talking about. This is the model we're using is an open source. Like, you know, this has been built and worked on by a lot of scientists over time. And one of the things that I think we would argue that's somewhat unique about this project is, and Trent kind of alluded to this too, we're taking this and using it. You know, we're sort of in the quintessential extension mindset, right? We're translating this into something usable, so that we are sort of tapping into that research capability and pulling that into this, exactly what you're saying. So I've got a field in Illinois. We have the Sergo, the USDA soils database. So I select that field, it pulls the data into it. Now we've got this weather forecasting capability, pull that into it. The model then runs on a daily basis, this estimate of what's going on, right? And so what does this do for the farmer? Well, we don't expect a lot to happen in the winter, particularly in that spring month. If I'm going to put a cover crop out there, particularly if I'm starting it for the first time, there is a different feel. If I put cereal rye in and then burn that, terminate cereal rye to go into plant, that's a different field than it was before, particularly if you're used to working that field in the fall or the spring. You know, for example, you may have 2,000 pounds of biomass out per acre. Like, you may have to figure out how to work through that. And I'm doing a very poor job compared to what Shalimar does when he usually explains this, but it is definitely this, you know, everything from the equipment needs, the timing needs, to how you think about getting into that field and planting into that cover crop. Your termination time is going to be pretty key, right? You're going to, you know, we can see this at the end of our dashboard, that really towards that April, May timeframe, as we pull in more heat units over time, more growing degree days, that cover crop's going to take off. So the difference in terminating, you know, April 15th versus March 15th can be pretty significant to what you're doing with the equipment you need in there, what you're going to plant. As we talked a lot with Shalimar's team at Purdue, trying to figure out what the nitrogen outcome is. You may need starter because that plant has taken up a lot of nitrogen into the biomass. So you're not going to get it if there's nitrogen there. So there's a lot of decisions that come around that, and we are in the early stages, right? We want to keep building this thing out, but you can kind of see that we get more questions. Every time we work on it, like, there are more questions that come up, like, oh, we need to check, how do we put that into it? How do we address that issue? So one of them, that we, in the release from the winter, was about the decomposition of that cover crop. So Shalimar's team has a model built into that kind of fits on the after the crop growth model. So at termination, you know, how long do we think this is going to take to decompose in that field? Eventually, we'd like to get estimates of the nitrogen impacts on that in the field. So a lot of that is, back to your question about the farmer, it is... particularly if you're not used to doing cover crops, right? It's giving you some more to think about as you make the management decisions in that field. We're not going to tell you when to terminate. Nobody has those answers. A lot of this is trial and error, is learning as you go. But this is going to give you a better set of information. And now with Trent's weather forecasting, we have a much improved weather forecast, and you're going to be able, we think, as we go into this spring, to really track what we think the growth is. You can look out your window, you can walk through it and see it, but we're going to have, you know, some numbers around that you can then use in your decision making. And that's ultimately what it comes down to. This is just trying to help that decision. It's trying to help the adoption process. Many farmers have a lot of questions and concerns about how this practice works in their field. And so this isn't going to solve them all, but this is a little bit more data, a little bit more information, frankly, a whole lot more science going into that decision-making, and particularly in the spring window. Ultimately hoping we get more farmers adopt the practice, more farmers that adopt the practice, less nitrogen in our waters. And that's sort of the net outcome.
Shalimar Armstrong, of course, is an agronomist at Purdue University. He and his team have been working with the folks here at the University of Illinois, including Trent Ford and Rabin Batrai, who's in the Department of Agricultural and Biological Engineering. Of course, we also have with us Jonathan Kappas in the Department of Agricultural and Consumer Economics.
Again, Shalimar Armstrong is at Purdue University and an agricultural economist. He developed some of the data that underpins the online web tool.
It's a great question. So we're collecting, first of all, the tool, one of the goals of the tool is to help farmers visualize cover crop growth. And so at this study site in Lexington, Illinois, we have several years since 2014 of several years of data that describes and quantifies cover crop growth, namely cereal rye growth, right? And this is the cover crop biomass, cover crop nitrogen content within the biomass, and cover crop carbon content within the biomass. And so the data collected that describes the biomass and its constituents is then used to calibrate and validate the model. In addition, we also quantified the impact of the presence of the cover crop and the performance of the cover crop to decrease nitrate loss in tile drainage, right? And so over those same amount of years, we're collecting the amount of water in the form of tile drainage that's leaving the site, okay? In this replicated study, we're also collecting and quantifying the mass and concentration of nitrate that's leaving the site in the water and the impact of cover crops on that mass and concentration of nitrate leaving the tile drainage site. We're also measuring the cash crop yield, let's say corn cash crop yield, right? And that's also a critical component that helps understand the hydrology and the loss of nutrients. Right. And that's also a component of data from the field study that's underpinning the tool. So the tool, number one, it helps farmers to visualize and conceptualize cover crop growth on their field. Right. So you may have a farmer who's thinking about, hey, I want to adopt cover crops this year. What the tool does is to say, before you actually put it on the ground, let's model this before your very eyes so that you can kind of play with the idea of having cover crops on your farm. So number one, it says, okay, this farmer can select their site that they would want to grow cover crops, the actual field, and then they are allowed to give some input data on what their management is, you know, whether they're growing corn, soybean, you know, the nitrogen that they are applying to, let's say, corn, when they will apply the nitrogen, when they would like to plant the corn, when they would like to terminate the cover crop, right? And so then that farmer would run the tool, and the tool would then generate what the biomass would be over time. And it will give an output of a graph of biomass accumulation over time and for above ground biomass of the cereae, right? And then at the same time, it's also giving the CDN ratio of that biomass in an output graph, okay? Also, in the output is a key component of, you know, the percent nutrient loss reduction. So in other words, what's the percent reduction in nitrate loss in the tile drainage because of the presence of the cover crop?
Interesting. So could I go back in time in the tool, because it calculates based on predicted weather and actual weather after it's passed. Can I go back in time, say to the fall on the farm, and I think what you've told me is that I can model what would be happening with a cover crop if I were to have sown it and gave it some inputs as related to the tool itself, and it would tell me what that crop should look like today. It would also predict what it should look like in March and April as well. Correct? Right. And then as time passes, it fills in the weather and resolution of what's happening on the field gets better?
Yes. Yes. So it gets updated with actual weather updates. That's one of the big improvements.
So I can model a cover crop on a farm that doesn't actually have a cover crop on it.
Yes, exactly. It would perform on that field. Exactly. That's exactly what the model does. It helps farmers visualize cover crop growth.
One last thing, and I'll turn back to you, Jonathan Kappas. We need to know where to find this cover crop tool.
So there's two ways to find it. The first is the direct route, which is go to covercrop.ncsa.illinois.edu. So again, this is hosted by the National Center of Supercomputing Applications here on campus. They have done an amazing job working with Ravine, with Shalimar, and with Trent, like converting this into this usable, workable tool. So we're pretty ecstatic about the work that NCSA has done. So you can go that way. Or you can jump through the FarmDoc system. Either get through FarmDoc daily or go straight to the covercrop.ncsa.illinois.edu website.
Jonathan Kappas is an agricultural policy specialist working in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. If you'd like to try out the Cover Crops Analyzer, you can do that easily enough at covercrop.ncsa.illinois.edu. That's covercrop.ncsa.illinois.edu. NCSA stands for National Center for Supercomputing Applications. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org.